Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. This week, we're celebrating Halloween, one of my all-time favorite holidays. We'll visit Louisiana's preeminent voodoo priestess, Sally Ann Glassman, at the Island of Salvation Botanica in the New Orleans Healing Center. Then, ghost whisperer Marianne Winkowski explains the role recipes play in the world of restless spirits. According to Marianne, sometimes it's that secret ingredient that's keeping them from crossing over. We're brewing up a hauntingly delicious time on this week's Louisiana Eats. Marianne Winkowski is a church-going housewife and mother of two who lives in the Ohio suburbs. Marianne also has the ability to see and speak with ghosts. It might surprise you to learn that one of the things these earthbound spirits want to share with her are their recipes. She compiled them into a book, perfect for the season, called Beyond Delicious, The Ghost Whisperer's Cookbook. Marianne says her experience with ghosts goes back to her childhood.
I was 7 in Catholic school, first grade, and that's when I found out nobody else could do it.
And so what did you see? What happened?
So it was lavatory break, and we're walking back 2 by 2 down the hallway, and I glanced back and saw one of my little friends, and she had this very, he was like a creepy-looking guy standing behind her. He was missing a couple teeth. He almost looked like a hobo. And I said, "Sister," I says, "there's a man standing by Susie, and I don't like the way he looks." And she looked down at me and tapped the top of my head, and she says, "Oh, Marianne, that's just her guardian angel." So I came home that day, and I remembered, and I called my grandmother, and she says, "Well, Marianne, not everybody can do it. You got to be quiet. You can't tell anybody. You have to keep it a secret. You'll get your mom and dad in trouble." And that's what I did. I was married to my wonderful husband for over 2 years before I told him I could do it.
So your grandmother had her own personal experience with this, and that's how she knew what was going
on. Grandma had the ability that if some Paisan or Goomba died over in the old country in Italy, she could talk to him. And 60, 70 years ago, her little claim to fame was if somebody died over in the old country, she'd dream about him that night. She'd get up in the morning. She'd go across the street and she'd say, "Rose, your brother Luigi died last night." Well, I was there at her house that week. Somebody died over in Italy. And this one morning I got up and Grandma fed me breakfast and I went off into the sunroom to play. And so she hears me talking my heart out in Italian to somebody in this little sunroom. And she's standing in the doorway and, of course, she doesn't see anybody. But she's listening and she thought, Marianne's pretty smart. She overheard me telling Grandpa who died. And that's what she's talking about. So she says, "Marianne, who are you talking to?" I told her. She says, "Where is he?" And I pointed to him. She says, "Well, ask him this and ask him that. And ask, well, I'm 2 years old. How do I know these things?" So she realized I could see and talk to him when I was awake. That's why she started taking me to funerals when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me the difference between earthbound spirits and those who have crossed over.
Okay. Psychic mediums are the people that have the ability to talk to spirits that have gone into the light and crossed over. I cannot see anybody that's gone to the light. I see the ones that made the choice after they died not to go into the light.
Ah, so they're the ones still hanging around.
Exactly, and those are the ones that cause problems in people's houses. they don't eat or sleep, but they need human energy to keep going. So they're the ones that, like to make problems in houses so people get stressed out or scared or aggravated or tired, and that's where they get their energy from.
Now, aside from in houses, you find them congregating in other places as well, don't you?
They are going to be anywhere where there is a crowd of people. Malls, theaters, stadiums, airplanes.
What about restaurants?
Oh, yes, restaurants, absolutely.
What have you seen in restaurants?
My husband and I were sitting close to the little room where they walk in where they would get soup or the coffee for the patrons, okay?
Uh-huh.
There was a refrigerator type thing in there that you could slide the door to get creamers out and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So every time one of the waitresses would go in there and get something, they would close the door, but this woman ghost would crack it open about 2 inches. And every time the manager would come by, whoever was closest, I told you to keep that door closed. What's wrong with you? And the looks on these poor waitstaff's faces was, I must be cracking up. And so I finally started staring at this ghost. And she looked at me, and I winked at her. And then she really looked at me. And I just looked at her, and I said, knock it off. And she finally went in a different side of the restaurant where I couldn't see her.
So ghosts can actually move objects.
Oh, gosh.
You see a lot of violent things like that?
They can definitely do stuff. They're always going to be more active and have more energy to do that the week working up to a full moon. Let's say this coming Saturday is a full moon, which it is not, but let's pretend it is.
Yeah.
Last Saturday, they would have had a little bit more energy, Sunday a little bit more, Monday a little bit more, Tuesday a little bit more, until Saturday. It's like feeding time at the zoo. They could move jewelry. They can move remotes. They could move garage door openers, coffee cups, bills, money, keys. And some of these ghosts that are in places like that are restaurant ghosts. They just hang out there all the time. But maybe one of the customers or the patrons that are coming in has one attached to them and is coming in with them.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, it's TV, it's the movies. You had to die in the property. You had to own the house. But they could go anywhere they want. Who's going to tell them they can't?
Well, let me ask you this. I was pretty fascinated when I learned that you are also capable of detecting ghosts over the phone.
Yes.
So I was wondering, by any chance, do you detect anybody hanging around the WWNO studio with us?
Okay. There is a woman, and she's in, like, a kitchen area. Actually, why do you have 2 coffee pots in there?
I don't know.
Okay. But she's by the coffee pot.
Okay. What does she look like?
She's not very old. She's probably only about 45 years old. And from the way she's dressed, I would say she died maybe early 90s.
Wow, that's fair. Well, I'll have to do some detecting on that because the station's been here for about 40 years, so goodness knows who could be lurking.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, and she could belong to somebody that works there.
When did you get your first recipe from a ghost?
I got invited to a house of a lady that lived alone, an older woman. Her husband had died. And as soon as she opened the door and invited me in, oh, it smelled so good in that house. Well, here when I walked up to the kitchen, there on the cooling racks were nut rolls. I said, oh my gosh, I said, your nut rolls smell so good. And the ghost, it was a woman standing there, and she says, oh yeah, they smell good. She says, but they taste terrible.
Oh.
She said she has no idea how to make a nut roll. And I said, oh, no. And so we get all done, and I said to the woman, are you ready to let me let her go? The woman said, oh, yes. Is she going to go to heaven? I says, well, I'm going to make the white light and let her walk into it. That's my plan. So the ghost looks at me, and she says, get a pencil and paper. I'm going to give her my nut roll recipe. I have a better nut roll recipe than hers. And I'm going, oh, okay. So I says, can I have paper and pencil? So she hurry up, and she got me paper and pencil, and I scribbled down this recipe. And so I get all done, and I release the woman, and the lady that owns the house says, what did you write down? I said, well, this woman was so happy that you had me here to release her that she gave you her secret nut roll recipe. Would you like it? And so she goes, oh, yeah. Over the years, I just accumulated tons of these like that. But the funny part with this particular story was this lady calls me, and she says to me, that recipe that that ghost lady gave me, was it like a secret recipe? I said, why? She goes, everybody's asking me for that recipe. She says, nobody ever asked for my recipe. I thought, oh.
Well, that is one of the recipes in your book, Beyond Delicious, the Ghost Whisperer's Cookbook. How'd you get the idea for the book?
It was actually a bookseller that gave me the idea for it. Somebody came up to me and said, my grandmother died. Can you contact her? Because she had the best recipe for some cookie. She died telling it to nobody. I says, you know, I've got boxes full of recipes from ghosts. I says, you know, maybe the cookie recipe's in there. I says, one of these days I'll have to put it together. And this bookseller's next to me, he goes, you have recipes from ghosts? I says, oh, boxes full. And, you know, ghosts try to be very helpful, but unfortunately most people can't understand them or hear them, and so they have to find somebody like me that can actually talk to them and get the recipe. Plus the fact, don't we all know somebody that died, or when they give you a recipe, they just change one little thing so it's never the right recipe?
I've always wondered about that. You know,
yes.
I thought that was the evil grandmother who did that.
You know, I think it's the adoration that they think because nobody can do it like they do it. But sometimes the guilt of not giving out that recipe is one of the reasons why they stick around. So that's could be as simple as unfinished business of why they didn't cross over, because they didn't tell somebody a correct recipe.
Well, Marianne, on behalf of myself and all the Louisiana Eats listeners, I want to wish you and all of your ghostly friends a very happy Halloween.
Well, thank you so much. And please get a little spooky, but stay safe.
Marianne Winkowski and her recipes from the dearly departed, Beyond Delicious, The Ghost Whisperer's Cookbook. When we come back, we'll explore the magical spirit world of Voodoo with priestess Sally Ann Glassman. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. Mambo Sally Ann Glassman has practiced the ancient religion of Voodoo in New Orleans since 1977. She owns and operates the Island of Salvation Botanica in the Healing Center on St. Claude Avenue. Today, Sally's welcoming me and our Louisiana Eats listeners into her botanica for an exploration of the ancient practices of the Voodoo religion. Sally Ann, thank you so much for having us here.
Well, thanks for having me and having this here.
This is really quite a bustling little place you have in here. People are constantly coming and going, and I had never seen this little special room just off your main shop. What do you use this little room for?
This is my reading room, and I do crystal ball readings, and the other people that work in the shop do tarot readings, and we've got a lot of spirits in here with us, so they may be rattling the equipment a little or making themselves known. We'll see.
Well, I would like to address your title first, because I was confused about it when I visited your website. It was spelled M-A-N-B-O, but how is that actually pronounced?
It's pronounced Mambo, and most people spell it with an M, but the actual official Creole spelling is M-A-N-B-O, Mambo.
And what does that mean?
It means priestess, basically. I was initiated as a priestess of Vodou in Haiti in Port-au-Prince in 1995 by my mentor, Edgar Jean-Louis, who was a real shining light in my life and really transformed how I see and experience the world.
Well, you are one of just a handful of Americans who have actually been initiated into the religion. Tell me about the initiation and tell me about that life's journey that brought you there.
Well, I always sort of blindly stumbled through my life and wasn't aware that it was spirit calling me. And in fact, a woman who lived in my neighborhood, Tina Gerard, she suggested that I go down to Haiti with her and experience a ceremony there. And I went to her house, and we were breaking bread and talking about going, and the phone rang. And it was a mutual friend in Haiti saying, "Why doesn't she just come and initiate?" Literally not knowing any better, I said, "Sure," and went down, and certainly didn't expect to be initiated as a high priestess. But it's a week-long initiation. It's very intense. You're secluded from the world, and I can't say too much about it. But basically, it stripped me of everything that I used to identify myself, and physically and emotionally and spiritually and academically. And then to get through it, you had to take up your power and just be yourself. For Jewish Ukrainian American like me, that's a pretty neurotic charge to have to do. And it was an amazing experience.
How many people do you estimate are participating in various aspects of the religion here in Louisiana?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. Almost everybody knows a little something without even realizing it about Vodou. It's certainly a brand for the city and a brand within the state. We've got Vodou barbecues and Vodou lounges and Vodou fests, and everybody knows a little something about a Gri-Gri or have seen a Vodou doll, which don't actually get used in Vodou.
I was going to ask you about those because, you know, that's one of, I think, the strangest commercializations of the religion is here in New Orleans. Every gift shop seems to have Vodou dolls from China.
Yeah, made in Taiwan.
How do you feel about that?
There's so much misunderstanding about Vodou and so much disinformation that I've made it a bit of a personal quest to right those wrongs and do a little positive PR for Vodou, which essentially is about healing and balance and service to the positive forward motion of the world.
Well, I think that people by now must be wondering, Poppy, what in the heck are you talking to Sally Ann Glassman about? Aren't you supposed to be talking about food? But food actually plays an incredibly important part in the religion, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And in a place like Haiti, food is a big deal. There's not enough of it. If anybody out there has ever not had enough food, you realize that this is something of great value, and it carries energy, life force within it. We can't live without food. To stop and literally say grace over this food and this life that's being given up for us so that we can survive, it's a big deal. In Haiti, there's a great deal of animal sacrifice that goes on, and it's within a cultural context that makes sense, and a whole community, after a ceremony has concluded, will eat the food, so it's helping the whole community to survive. It's become a very controversial point for me personally because I happen to be vegan and I don't kill animals, so I've had to work with what people derogatorily refer to as vegetarian voodoo. And I don't sacrifice animals, so I give all kinds of other offerings, fruits and vegetables and flowers and items that the spirit also appreciates and can consume. So I've gone to great lengths to ask the spirits when they show up, are you okay with this? And, you know, I know you're used to fried pork, but are you happy with this? And they always tell me that they're fine with it. And I think the key is that in each culture that's practicing, we're all going to be different. I'm not Haitian, and this isn't Haiti. This is New Orleans. And we have to figure out what has the same meaning to us and what is as valuable to us so that the spirit will know that we're giving them something that matters to us and also matters to them.
Are there any particular Louisiana foods that you have found great use for in your religion that maybe other places practicing similar ceremonies and such wouldn't have access to or be using?
I can give you an example of a spirit that is becoming what's called a Lawa, one of these archetypal spirits in Vodou, and she's very much associated with New Orleans, and that's Marie Laveau, who was an historic high priestess. She was the first commercial priestess in New Orleans. And she's a figure that really lives on in our psyches and in the psyche of the city, buried in St. Louis No. 1 Cemetery. And to this day, people go and give her food offerings and give her drink and flowers and Mardi Gras beads.
And she's located right next door to Dutch Morial's tomb.
Right next, speaking of the Haitian connection. Yeah.
I always find it interesting that Dutch is looking at Marie's tomb.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Maybe they're working in the spirit realm. But at any rate, I think that Marie really appreciates when you serve her Creole food, pecan pie and you know, nice spicy New Orleans dishes, and all of that means something to her, and it allows us to make the historic connection and the legacy that we've inherited from her, and that there's still interaction going on between this spirit who's long dead and this archetypal force that she represented, and she's still active in our lives, and we make that connection through the food that we offer.
Well, we're getting ready to celebrate one of your most religious high holy days. That's the Day of the Dead, which, of course, in the Catholic religion is All Saints Day.
Right.
So tell me about how you celebrate Gede and what happens on that day.
Yeah. Gede, again, the spirit of death and sex and regeneration, and he stands at the crossroads between life and death. His whole month is November, and in Haiti, there are celebrations that go on every part of the month, generally on November 2nd, but we celebrate it on November 1st, along with the Day of the Dead, which is the time when the veil between the living and the dead is most diffuse, and the dead come back to visit us. So we have everybody at this Day of the Dead ceremony bring both an offering for the spirit, and then we have a big potluck for the people. And at the end of our potluck, we proceed to a cemetery, and we bring all the food with us, and we feed all the dead and say praise names for them, and we say prayers from different traditions for the dead. It's absolutely beautiful.
So could we go into your shop, and
sure,
you could show me some of maybe the more popular items that people come here seeking, and let's go out into the shop.
Well, we'll start with these chicken foot fetishes that are all over the shelves and are brightly colored and decorated and bejeweled, and some of the fanciest chicken feet you're going to find around. They're used on your front door or the rearview mirror of your car. You might put them on your computer or anything of value. And they keep away thieves and evil spirits, computer viruses, or anything bad that you don't want to happen to you.
Tell me some of the more unusual things that you've got here. Dragon's blood. Now, where does that come from?
Well, I've seen dragon's blood as a resin from a tree, and I've seen it growing in Australia, actually. But it's this, I'll open up the jar for you, it's this beautiful red, deep blood red resin. Obviously, we didn't kill any dragons for it. But if you If you smell it, it's got a really spicy smell, and it's used to kind of bump up the magic in anything that you're doing. We've also got all kinds of things like bath salts. The bath salts are wonderful and quite addictive. They're soothing, they're restful, they help you to move stuck emotions. They also have oils in them that draw spirit around you, that give you a hand in your life to make things better for yourself. There are all kinds of Catholic statues. There are the beautiful voodoo sequin flags all over the walls. And then there's the wall of candles. As silly as some of them may seem, there's a shut-up candle and there's a do-as-I-say candle. I think essentially so much of this is about empowering the self. So much of what we experience disempowers us and makes us feel helpless and hopeless. And the candles help us to light the way for spirit to find us, and they help us to focus our own minds so that we can maybe change up some of what we're experiencing.
Do you ever see somebody come in here and snatch up something that you know has a great deal of inherent power, and you question whether or not that person ought to leave here with it?
I can't tell you how many times people have wanted to get back a lover that they lost and force the person back somehow, magically. But what I try to do is guide them towards a healthier, more balanced approach and get to what's really the issue. So instead of using some potion to force somebody to love you, I try to get them to instead maybe do a spiritual bath in bath salts for love, and ask them while they're bathing and soaking in the bath salts and communing with spirit to ask for the openness of heart to love themselves, and that in turn will draw love into their experience.
So as the high priestess here, it sounds like you have to combine a great deal of practical knowledge, magical knowledge, and psychiatry sometimes.
A lot of psychological stuff. You know, it helps that I was a bartender for 30 years. got a lot of experience in people.
Is that what you did when you first came to New Orleans?
Absolutely. The first place I attended bar in New Orleans was at Jed's on Oak Street. Talk about an introduction to New Orleans. It's not that different than what I do now, you know, different definitions of spirits maybe. People come in at their own level. I'm willing to meet somebody at whatever place they're at in their life, whether it's at a bar or in a healing center, or if they're picking up some trinket that they think is hilarious, or a chicken foot that they think is representative of their trip to New Orleans, because doors open. And they don't know what they're responding to. I certainly didn't know when I was tending bar that this was going to lead to a whole life for me. I knew I thought voodoo was interesting and intriguing, but I certainly had no clue that spirit was calling me.
Well, Sally Ann, I want to thank you so much for welcoming us into your most special magical place here on St. Claude. And I hope we can come back and talk again sometime soon.
I hope so. Thank you for doing this.
Sally Ann Glassman, priestess in the tradition of Vodou at the Island of Salvation Botanica in the New Orleans Healing Center. Sally Ann Glassman and many others pay tribute to New Orleans' most famous priestess of the 19th century, Marie Laveau. In keeping with the Vodou practice of feeding the dead, food offerings are left year-round for Marie Laveau, both at her tomb in St. Louis Cemetery No. 2 and at other significant French Quarter sites, such as Congo Square. Often, it's a bowl of gumbo, ringed by a magical circle of silver coins. The magic of Marie Laveau's gumbo is mentioned over and over again in documents of her time. It's a recorded fact that in the 1800s, Marie was allowed to serve that gumbo as the last meal for condemned men. I've never been able to find a recipe for Marie Laveau's gumbo, but lately I've begun to believe my gumbo may have some magical powers of its own. On Super Bowl Sunday, held in New Orleans in 2013, jazz trumpeter Wynton Marsalis brought his CBS Sunday Morning crew into my kitchen to give the nation a taste of the food he believes to be emblematic of who we are here in Louisiana. When I served him a bowl of my gumbo, Wynton tasted it, rolled his eyes, and said directly into the camera, "Have mercy, Poppy." Then on a recent Friday, my phone rang and a voice said, "Baby, I need some gumbo." Wynton was on his way to New Orleans with the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra to perform his Abyssinian Mass at the Sanger Theater. But apparently, all he could think of was my gumbo. Before the performance, I delivered gumbo to his dressing room and mentioned how flattered I was that he'd remembered it. "Poppy," Wynton said, "you know you're not playing with that gumbo. So proceed with caution if you cook up a pot of my gumbo. It just might work a magical spell for you." You can find a copy of my Creole seafood gumbo recipe on our website, LouisianaEatsRadio.com. I'm Poppy Tooker, and according to Wynton Marsalis, my gumbo is real Louisiana Eats.
Standing there an oak tree in the dark. Oh, Marie Laveau.
After the next short break, we'll travel back in time to the 19th century and explore the elaborate mourning traditions at the historic Herman Grima House. Stay with us.
Way down yonder in New Orleans, she made gree-gree with an old ram home.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. One of the best ways to learn about life in New Orleans of the 1830s is to visit the Herman Grima House. Meticulously restored to the time it was built, the house, in many ways, is a living museum. Docents changed the interior decoration seasonally, just as was done in the Creole homes of the day. During the month of October, death is a very visible visitor here, as the mourning customs of the 19th century are highlighted. Museum director Mamie Gasparez is here to take us on this very interesting trip back in time. Hi, Mamie.
Hi, Poppy. Thank you so much for coming to visit us today. This is an awfully exciting day.
Give us a little bit of history about this historic property, the Herman Grima House.
This lovely home was actually a family home that was constructed in 1831. Sam Herman and his wife raised their family here. They were here from 1831 into the 1840s. After that time, they ran into a bit of financial trouble, and they lost the house. And this is a glimpse into the lives of the 19th century families that lived here in the French Quarter. It really was a massive working property where many people lived and made their homes for many generations.
So, Mamie, here we are at the beautiful, imposing front door of this house, and you can't help but notice as you pass by in the street that death has been a visitor because there's a special wreath on the door. Explain the door decorations.
There's a special wreath on the door because we are actually interpreting this month the funerary customs and practices of the early part of the 19th century by putting the home together just as if there was a body in the front parlor and we were burying that individual from the home.
Standing here in the front parlor, you can't help but be naturally drawn to the coffin. So this is very typical of a coffin you'd find at that time?
Absolutely. A coffin of that time is the Victorian era pinch toe coffin. So you can see that the bottom actually narrows, so it would actually pinch the toes of the deceased. And of course, we've adorned this with some black crepe, some draping over the top, and then a modest bouquet of flowers. The mourning process, wearing black, non-reflective black, was really an absence of vanity that was we try to create, and that was part of the mourning ritual, and primarily a Catholic ritual. This was still a very Catholic and a very French town. So here we would have draped the portrait of the person who died. And all the mirrors, so you wouldn't be paying attention to how lovely you looked or all of the other more social aspects of your life.
So right off the parlor is the formal dining room. May we go in there?
Oh, please. I look forward to it. And anytime people gather in Louisiana or in New Orleans, there's got to be food.
Absolutely.
So as I mentioned, one of the complete aspects of mourning didn't just extend to your attire, but in fact, the wealthier families would have even had china that was this blue-red called heliotrope. So there was actually an entire set of fine china that would have been used.
Right after the month of October, November 1st, All Saints Day, what would happen in the cemeteries around All Saints Day?
Just like New Orleanians can't gather without food, they turn everything into a party. Some of the descriptions of All Saints Day on November 1st were akin to a public fair. Police had to make sure that order was in place. There were crowds. Sometimes the more affluent families, you might even buy a new frock.
Back in the 1800s, it was very common for there to be street vendors that were perhaps adding to the food selection of what you brought along in your picnic basket.
Absolutely. Street vendors have been part of New Orleans culture, food, and social for centuries, actually. Frozen treats were always notable. My own comment is, it's hot. How did it get frozen? Especially with a limited amount of ice during the 19th century. The kolah, of course, just we're famous for here at the Herman Grema, you're famous for. Those wonderful rice beignet-like cakes that we make here in the hearth kitchen. Those, of course, were probably one of the more popular treats.
Mamie, with all this research you've done into this time period, what are the big takeaways here? What are the things that you've discovered that you think will be applicable to people of the 21st century?
Remaining relevant is such the lifeblood of a museum. It isn't just freezing the past in time, but it's being able to compare and contrast your own family life, your own occupation, your own traditions, your own dining and culinary traditions with the way things were. And again, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You'll see some things in these wonderful traditions that resonate with your own traditions or make you understand how your family became the way it is now, how you may have amassed your friends that really become part of your extended family. So I think it's an opportunity to reflect and to really understand that each and every family tradition is precious.
Well, thanks for welcoming us into this beautiful Creole home.
Thank you, Poppy. We always love having you here.
Mamie Gasparez of the Herman Grema House, where mourning is an annual October event. Louisiana Eats culinary heritage heroes both created and helped maintain the fabric of our amazing local food. On All Saints Day here in Louisiana, we honor our dead, grateful for the legacy they left behind. One of the true culinary greats was Owen Brennan, founder of Brennan's Restaurant. In 1943, Owen Brennan gambled his life savings of $3,000 to purchase the old Absinthe House Bar. By 1954, the successful entrepreneur had decided to open Brennan's Restaurant at 417 Royal Street, where he intended to further popularize a new dining tradition he dubbed Breakfast at Brennan's. This festive, alcohol-laced celebration had begun at Owen's first restaurant, the Vieux Carré, located just across the street from the original old Absinthe House. Locals and visitors flocked there for unique dishes created by Dutch chef Paul Blanchet, such as eggs hussard and the world's most popular flaming dessert, Bananas Foster. Sadly, before his new Royal Street restaurant opened, Owen died in his sleep on November 4, 1955. At the time of his death, none of Owen's three sons were old enough to take over the family business. Pip was a graduating college senior, Jimmy a sophomore in high school, and Ted only 7 years old. Owen's widow, Maud, banded together with his siblings, Adelaide, Ella, John, Dick, and Dottie, and Brennan's Royal Street Restaurant opened as planned in the spring of 1956. As the 20th century wore on, many of Owen's siblings and their children stretched their wings and expanded the Brennan name into numerous dining establishments across metropolitan New Orleans and beyond. Tragically, due to an unresolved dispute between Owen's sons, Pip and Ted, Brennan's Restaurant served their last breakfast on Royal Street, June 27, 2013. That's why we're recognizing Brennan's Royal Street Restaurant as this week's Culinary Heritage Hero, brought to you with support by Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. Goodbye, old friend. Your loss is mourned by diners worldwide. For 69 years, some of the finest Louisiana eats were served at the original Brennan's Restaurant. Our friend Claire Crespo comes to call on Louisiana Eats. We're always guaranteed a yummy fun time. After all, that's the name of her video series and website, Yummy Fun Cooking. Claire is self-described as baddie for Halloween, so we're checking with her for some special tips on how you can make your Halloween extra special this year. Claire, welcome back to Louisiana Eats.
Oh, hello, Poppy. Thanks for having me.
Well, Halloween has always been your favorite holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, from childhood into your young adulthood, was there a turning point? Did anything ever change?
Oh, I just think it always spoke to me. The costumes, the candy, I love every bit about it. And I've always just gotten way into it. And when I was a kid, there's pictures of me in the middle of the summer with those plastic vampire fangs in my mouth. Like, I love those things.
So, Claire, I know that in your world, you don't think you have to wait until dusk for Halloween to start. And you're going to start it at breakfast this year, right?
I've already started it, just so you know. But for those that only celebrate on the 31st, start in the morning and have a Halloween breakfast. I have a menu, egg eyeballs, which are fried eggs that you put a little black olive slice in the center of the yolk to kind of define the eyeball, and then kind of squiggle some hot sauce or some ketchup if you're making it for a little kid and they don't like hot sauce, as like bloodshot veins on the white. And then you could take a hand cookie cutter and cut out some bread and make some severed hand toast with a little red jam. Then I think my favorite is hash brains.
Hash brains.
form your shredded potatoes in a kind of brain shape. So, you know, put a line in the middle that kind of defines the lobe.
Yes.
And then stick it in the oven.
Yeah.
And then also monster mouths, which are a little dish of yogurt. And then you cut out a red apple to make big, crazy monster lips. And then put little teeth. You can use raisins. You could use yogurt-covered raisins. You could use marshmallows.
What are some of your other Halloween must-do treats?
I like the body part genre. I think that is particularly amusing. You can make brain cupcakes. You can make eyeball cupcakes. I have tarantula cookies. I have a recipe for that. You can make gingerbread skeletons, which are gingerbread cookies, but you, instead of piping the outline of the cookie, you pipe the skeleton of the body.
Yes.
Spiderweb soup is one of my recipes.
Spiderweb soup? What goes into that?
That's just a simple tomato soup in a bowl, and then you put some sour cream and a little bit of milk in a squeeze bottle and squeeze concentric circles onto the top of your soup, and then you take a knife or a chopstick and you kind of pull it out from the center, and it makes a beautiful spider web.
Well, that sounds delicious too. And
yeah,
what's
yeah.
your favorite thing for Halloween supper?
Well, I love spaghetti and eyeballs. It's fortifying before you have all that candy. It's just a plain old spaghetti with red sauce, and you make a meatball, but the meatball has a pimento-stuffed olive inserted in the side of it. So when you're plating your spaghetti, you put a big pile of spaghetti, and then you put two meatballs, you know, with the olives peering out. So very simple. It's just an addition of a couple olives, but, like, totally transforms your dinner into something totally creepy.
Sounds like really great fun. Will you please send us a recipe or two for us to post on the website?
Of course.
Now, Claire, I understand that you think even costumes can be edible.
I do.
How in the world do you make an edible costume?
Well, a couple of years ago, I was kind of playing around with this recipe for cookie costumes. So it's just a sugar cookie recipe, just basic sugar cookies that you cut into, oh, you could go crazy. I've made, like, bat ears or witch's noses or big giant eyeballs or vampire fangs. And then you put a popsicle stick before you bake it underneath them and then take them out of the oven. And then you can frost them and decorate them however you like. And then you have your cookie that's kind of your costume that you hold up to your face. You could do a mustache, which is real popular right now. They're really funny.
I bet they are. It's really more edible
yes.
masks.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because I was really worried about sending the kids out in edible costumes and like they might come home chilly without much on.
Next Halloween, we're going to talk again and I'm going to have perfected a complete costume.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking to us all the way from L.A. to help our Louisiana Eats listeners get ready for a yummy, fun Halloween.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for having me, and happy Halloween.
Yummy, fun Halloween ideas from Claire Crespo. Visit our website, LouisianaEatsRadio.com, for more of Claire's ideas on how to make your holiday special. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we'll uncover the favorite drink of the Czech Republic with Bohemian bartender George Nemec.
And what we do in Czech Republic, we've got this little tradition. We have to look into people's eyes, into our friends' eyes when we do our little toast. And instead of cheers, we say na zdraví.
Na zdraví.
Beautiful. You must have Czech roots somewhere out there that you don't know about.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org and louisianaeatsradio.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rousey's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company and LCI Workers' Comp. Our media sponsor is Louisiana Life Magazine, the magazine of a great state. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Thanks to executive producer Thomas Walsh, consulting producer Margaret Howes, and sound engineer Guy Mulladew.
I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.